Hello, and welcome back to the Mindful World Summit. I'm Dr. Stacy, and I'm thrilled to be joined today by Gillette Jai. Gillette is the founder of the Jai Institute for Parenting, where she and her team have trained conscious parenting coaches from around the world, everywhere between the US, Canada, Dubai, and all these places in between. Her approach helps parents experience authentic, deep connection with their children while setting limits in a way that enhances a long-term relationship with their kids. And, you know, this approach also helps them raise children who are caring, capable, and confident. We're so thrilled to have her today, where we're going to talk about mastering a parenting breakthrough. Welcome, Gillette, to the summit.
Oh, thank you so much, Stacy, for having me. I'm so appreciative of being here.
And we're appreciative of you taking the time to do this with us today. So we're talking about parenting breakthroughs, and I'm just going to ask you to define what you mean by that.
Well, I think before defining a parenting breakthrough, I just wanted to talk about what comes up to a parenting breakthrough, the lead up to a parenting breakthrough. Mm-hmm. So we, and in, certainly in the world of mindfulness and consciousness, we're talking about how, you know, everything can be peaceful or harmonious, or we can be conscious of things. And the truth is that parenting is one of the most difficult and chaotic things you will ever do in your whole life. So,
yeah. Thank you for that.
We were with a friend last night, and she doesn't have a child, and she wants a child. And, you know, my husband and I were in the preteen phase right now, and we were just telling it really like how it is. So, so leading up to a parenting breakthrough, the reason that a parenting breakthrough is so important is because you have that zhuzh, you have that conflict, you have that chaos, you know, and it's like you're in a painful place and emotionally, and those are the moments where breakthroughs happen. And so parenting right now, the greatest opportunity for us as parents lies in our greatest challenges. And that's when we have the moment to break through. You know, I remember when I was about to give birth, I was a week before giving birth, and my midwife was a Sikh, and she was from New York, and she told everything really straight. She was super straightforward. And she sat me down, and I'll never forget this, and she said, "Gillette, this is going to be the most painful experience of your life, and it's completely doable." I was about to give natural childbirth. So she, and my whole body, Stacy, I just was so relieved knowing that we're going to go into a painful thing and it's completely doable. And my everything in me prepared for that. And I think that's what we need as parents, to know that we're up against, you're going to be up against challenges you never thought. You're a parent, your child's going to come to you with stuff you never thought that you would have to deal with, talk about, look inside of yourself for. And this is the moment that we have that's golden. Those are the opportunities that we have that are just absolutely precious. And I think it's inspired me time and time again to keep going into this work and to lean in to those difficult, challenging, painful conversations.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for that, because growth isn't comfortable. Consciousness is not just like zen. It's like slapping you, it's hitting you, and you can either lean into it and try to understand, or you can try to resist. And
And I heard, so last night we went to go see Liz Gilbert speak. Oh my God.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
With Rob Bell of Love Wins. And it just was incredible. She said something that blew my mind, and I just have to share it because our talk today, that it was, so it was about a year ago, and she shared this story, and she had a lover, Rhea, and she was passing. So she was going through operations, and they were going through a really tough time. And she said that this was a really tough time, and it was that and other things compiled onto it. And she just remembers going out to take a walk in New York and leaving their apartment and taking a walk. And she said, you know what? The strangest prayer came to me in that moment. And she said, she prayed, make it worse. Make it worse. If this is what you've got, because I'm not seeing right now. Like, I'm not seeing what I need to get right now. So bring it. Make it worse. So I can see, right? And I'm like, oh my God, who prays like that? Because, you know, we're in the law of attraction time and all this kind of, you know, like what we think about, we bring about and all that. But I heard that and I was like, yes. And I think, it, you know, in the genesis of birth, when we give birth to our babies, you as a mom are so incredibly strong. And you know, like, you've just gone through like the most painful, you know, our bodies forget it, but painful experience. And you know that that transformation is the doorway to so much love, like so much love, right? Yeah. And so she's in her story last night, she shared, and it got worse. Mm-hmm. And then she saw, and she finally saw, and she needed that. And so that's like the moment our hearts crack open to more love that's available to us. And we see, you know, we talk about transformation. This is what we need in transformation. You need that conflict, that pain, that fight, that, you know, there's something pushing against. And so that's why I was so touched by what she shared last night. It just really opened me up and thought, wow, this is what we're doing as parents. And we're so lucky that we have this opportunity as parents. Mm-hmm. I mean, the most transformation you will ever have, I think, is in relationship with another person. And we get to have it with our children and go through all of the cycles of, you know, letting go of how we were parented and all the everything that we have, all the patterning that we have inside of us.
Yes, absolutely. And so, you know, leading up to this is that there's going to be pain. Like, this is basically, it's those moments when we're reactive, that we are spinning in our heads, that we're acting in ways we don't even recognize, right? that we're just like, this is where we need to pay attention and shift. And you kind of alluded it to it there. And we've talked a bit about conscious parenting, but tell me, you know, where do people's attention need to go that's going to get them to that breakthrough?
Yeah, so the attention really needs to go, as far as I've seen it and experienced it in my own life, it needs to go within, because it's the hardest moment to be self-aware. We're not sitting on a mountaintop. We're not by ourselves. It's not quiet. It's certainly not quiet with children. Mm-hmm. And that moment, it's a muscle that we need to exercise of self-awareness in that moment. You know, that we need to go within and find out, what are we feeling, and take that pause. And it is not an easy thing to do, but in that moment when you're really angry and you can feel the rage is coming, just, can I just name it? You know, Daniel Siegel says, right, name and tame it. So when you name the feeling, you tame your brain a bit, the front part of the brain. So can we just, in that moment, take a breath and just name what's going on? Wow, I'm feeling really angry. And just by doing that, it pauses. It actually starts the process of pausing it and doing something else besides, you know, getting on the train of anger, getting on the fast moving train of reactivity, that you're going to just go down and, you know, make your child see what they've done wrong and shame them and blame, you know, we're getting off that train the moment that we pause and the moment that we self-reflect. Okay. And then once we choose to self-reflect, then we can also allow that space for our child. So we can allow a space of empathy. And I think empathy is the thing that actually stops the train. So empathy is, you know, seeing life from another person's perspective. It's getting into another person's shoes. It's realizing that your child's not out to get you in that moment. They're having a really big feeling and they're having a really big need, and they are doing their best to express themselves. Okay. I read once a great article about teenage years, that the teenage years, right? And as hard as they seem, and we don't know what the child is actually going through. You're trying to figure out what they're going through. And it looks like they're rebelling against you and they hate you and there's all this chaos mm-hmm. going on. Imagine that your child is crying out. They're just crying out. Those are their cries to say, Mom, please listen. This is the toughest thing I've ever been through. I don't know what's going on with my body and hormones, and I have no idea. And they're really just cries. And can we hear the cries in those moments? Like, can we be present enough? Can we take that breath and go, you know what? I just need to self-reflect and then offer the space of empathy to my child. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what stops the train.
Yeah. And it's tell me if I'm correct in this, but when we shift in that way to trying to understand, do we notice the shift in the child? So when we see that as a cry, as opposed to like beating us up or whatever, does that start a different process in terms of what's happening with the child towards us or towards wherever?
Oh my God, yes. I was thinking about how to describe this, because remember when Dolby first came into movie theaters, you first heard Dolby sound, right? So it was that loud, like, at the beginning of the movie. And then it got quiet. There's a crescendo, and then it's just silent. And to me, that's what it feels like. When you offer empathy to the child and then they are receiving it, it's like that end of the crescendo and it's silent and there's space. And you can see the child's body relax. And no matter what age they are, there's this beautiful connection that happens between the two of you where you're authentic. And that you don't have to be anything. I don't have to be the parent. You don't have to be the child. We're just authentic with each other. And we meet in that place. And that's where safety is created. I think a child feels really safe in that place because there's nothing we need to pretend about. There's just, I'm feeling really angry and frustrated right now and I need this. And, the child's saying, well, I'm feeling this. And it's just this amazing place where we're two human beings and we're coming together in this quiet space of connection. And once the connection's present, wow, it just... You ask, do you see a difference in the child? It's not as much the difference in the child. It's the difference in the quality of the connection that you have with the child. Mm-hmm. And I know personally, after building upon all these experiences of connection with my son, we can go through really hard moments and we've built upon this and he feels safe to come to me with anything. So even though like the hard moments, it's you're building safety. And that's why, if somebody comes to you and they're always pleasant and they're always, it's great. It's a great relationship. But if someone comes to you, if one of your really good friends comes to you and they're going through a very hard time and, you can hold that space of empathy and they're not being pretty. It's not pretty right now. Mm-hmm. Like they feel incredibly safe to come to you. And I know you're a therapist, right?
Yes.
So you see people at their messiest probably.
Yeah, sure.
You're creating such a space of safety with them because they can be messy. They can let it all out. And that's what we're doing with our children. And so once that space of safety is there, well, yes, the child's behavior changes, but I don't really like to come at it and say, oh, we're doing this so that the child's behavior will change.
Right.
We're doing this to deepen the connection that you have with the child. And once that deep quality of connection is there, well, anything's possible.
Right. Right. So there's any shift that's going to happen is going to come from that place.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. It's going to come from that place. And any value, any boundary you want to have with your child, people think conscious parenting is, free parenting, that kids are just running around and there's no limits, there are no boundaries, there are no family values, there's just, kind of free parenting. That's not what it is. I mean, that's in our world, that's not what it is. I believe that family values are super important and boundaries are really important too. your personal boundaries, the boundaries you make with your children. You know, if you're not okay with your child staying up till midnight as a 5-year-old or as a 12-year-old, that's your family value around sleep and taking care of your body. And those boundaries and those family values that you set are really take hold when you have the deep quality of connection. So I always say connection first and then cooperation, or connection first and then family values. And once they understand the family values within that context of connection, then they can embrace it too. And and we get to talk about, why is that important? Like, why is taking care of your body important? You know, why is eating healthy important? So,
So, you know, in speaking about boundaries, one of the things that can be confusing, I think, for parents with this model might be, like, how much do you share? Like, how authentic am I with my child? Can you give us some feedback about that?
You know, I think that's a personal decision. I think every family deals with it differently. And I know for me, oh, and the word that I was thinking about that I didn't say, not free parenting, is permissive parenting.
Okay.
Yes. Every family deals with that differently. For me, I've really dove head on into sex talks lately with my son, and how much to share about personal experience has been a fine line. So I'm really just sharing like what these things are and what the, what my value is around these things. So, and I'm learning this from a course that I'm taking right now. I think, how much do you share? I think when you're sharing about feelings, go ahead and share. I think our children really need to know we're human. How do you have anger? You know, how do you express anger in a healthy way? How do you express it so it's not spilling over onto another person, but you can be angry? Anger is incredibly clearing. Can you imagine if we never, like, you never had anger?
It's not healthy.
It's not healthy. Not healthy.
Shows up in a different way.
So I talk to my son all the time, you know, that I'm frustrated, and here's why I'm frustrated. And I really need this. I'm really needing, you know, acceptance, or I'm really needing to be heard now. And so he knows I'm human. And I think whatever the extent that you want to go with that, that's really a personal preference. I think that there is, I will say this, I think there is a boundary around your children when sharing too much so that your children feel like they need to take care of you emotionally. So I never want my child to feel like he has to take care of my feelings. This is for mommy. Like, these are my feelings. It's okay. Like, I, you know, I'm okay. I've got this. I'm just expressing them.
It's okay. You know, and that is, the model of this is within me. This is my job, and you can't control that. And also as a parent, you can't necessarily control what's happening within your child. It's not about that.
Right. Yeah.
That we can understand. And it sounds like, though, what's happening is that you are you're expressing and verbalizing what's happening within you, not necessarily acting it out. Like, it might come out a little bit in your behavior, but you're not necessarily just, you know, raging. You're just saying, like, this is how I'm feeling right now, and I'm having to figure out how to deal with this.
And and by doing that, you're modeling emotional intelligence for them too. So you're modeling, you know, I wasn't raised with this, so we weren't ever modeled this. But you're modeling, how do I talk about this before it turns into rage?
Right.
Or how do I rage but not have it be about you? And I think also there's something to say here that sometimes we can't explain what's going on. Like, it's, there, you know, there's a website that has over 3,000 feelings listed there.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah. So, 3,000 feelings. And, and I know there's probably many more. So, and certainly through puberty and adolescence, like, what an, you know, just a mixture of emotion that who knows exactly the words and the language around how to express this? Mm-hmm. And sometimes just being in the space with your child or being in the space with yourself, you know, I'm having this feeling, I'm having this experience, and I'm going to try to put words to it right now, but I don't even know if I can, but I'm going to try. And just knowing that that space is even available for you and that you're allowing that space for your child gives them, again, that safe feeling that we don't have to have it all figured out. You don't have to be mad or frustrated or sad, like the top five emotions. Mm-hmm. You can be, let's talk about it and mm-hmm. what brought it on. And, you know, so.
Right. We're going to figure it out along the way. So yeah. I think what's important about what you're highlighting there as well is that this isn't necessarily like one chance to get it right. Like this conversation could happen over a period of time.
Oh, right? Please. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And the more it happens, the better.
Mm-hmm.
The more okay. it happens. And if there's ever been a rupture, if there's ever been a conflict or there's been some time where you have raged at your child, then immediately or soon after, as soon as you can, going back and talking about the feelings and how did it make you feel and offering that space of empathy that actually repairs that, what we call it, a rupture.
Right. So we can fix things. We can go back. And that especially there is, you know, our kids come with this unbelievable level of love for us that there's a lot of forgiveness there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So tell me, I mean, along the same lines of boundaries, many of us have been parented in a way with rewards and punishments. Like this, you know, it is about the behavior. It's not about you. I'm punishing this behavior. Mm-hmm. Tell me your perspective on that from the way that you coach and from the model that you use.
Yeah. So punishments are so interesting. You know, I think about when you were punished in school, or say that a teacher, you know, punished you, did you feel closer to your teacher and immediately want to share with her all of your life stories, your deepest truths? No.
No. You were ashamed. You're humiliated.
Yeah, exactly. And, or a policeman gave you a ticket. Are you immediately like, oh my God, thank you. Let me share with you my deepest, like, love that I have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's punishment. Mm-hmm. So we're doing the same thing with our children. So punishment only serves to separate us from our children, and it creates a hierarchy. It's a hierarchy of control. And it's saying, you know, I'm above you and I'm going to do something to harm you. I'm going to do something to take something away. I'm going to do something that will stop you from doing whatever it is that you're doing. And punishments can be very effective in the short term to change a child's behavior. Why? Because they're scared. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to do that again. Oh my God, I'm scared. What mm-hmm. they fail to do is they fail to create that safety in the relationship, and they fail to really have that deep connection. If you're really wanting to be deeply connected with your child, punishments are not the way to go. And neither are rewards.
Neither are rewards. Tell us more about
neither
that.
Neither are rewards. No, your child's not a dog. I mean, you know, when your child feels deeply connected with you, they will fight for the connection. They're not going to fight for the reward. They're going to fight for the connection. So you don't need the reward. You know, Stacy, you and I are friends. We want to hang out together. I want to know about you. I want to find out, you know, I want to feel the connection. I want to feel the laughter with you. I want to feel like what it means to be with you. You don't have to take me to lunch for that. Like, you don't have to give me a reward for being like with you. Uh-huh. So a child doesn't need that reward either. Mm-hmm. And we want child to jump through our hoops. So we give them rewards, and we're really, we're almost bastardizing the connection. We're saying, you know what? Oh, I don't have faith in this connection. I need to give you this. I need to give you here. Right. Let me give you this. Here's a present. Here's a thing. I don't think you'll actually understand what we're doing here. I don't think you'll I don't think you'll respect enough that this is what we're, so I'm going to give you something to make you do this. And it's purely behavior driven.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So again, I don't think it deepens the connection at all.
What do you think is the long-term impact of that model, like for life? Because we're talking about building resiliency. What's your perspective on that, that behavioral approach?
Yeah, so I can share a story with you that
please do.
Brings up a story that, so this woman came to us about 7 years ago now, and her son was 11, and so they were punishing him and locking him in his room. His room actually had a lock on the door, like an outside lock on the door. And he was so angry. So this had been from birth. This was their parenting model. And they knew that they wanted to change it because his anger had gotten to such a point that he was trying to jump out of his mom's moving car or open the door. Pulling knives on his siblings in the living room. Like, he had a lot of pent up anger.
Yeah.
And so I think this is, and that's an extreme case, but I think that the effect of this punishment model is really stuffing down the feelings of the child. So it's not allowing the child to express whatever's going on. And it's saying underneath it, there's a huge message of shame that there's something shameful that's happening and we need to control it. And so the child is internalizing a lot of different messages. So when they took the lock off the door and when they wanted to shift this model of parenting, it was a long journey. It wasn't like, it took 9 months for this boy to turn around, but the connection that they had after that, well, I'll tell you about the journey first. So the journey was that he was still really angry. And sure. They had to come up with a whole new language and a whole new model for him to express his anger that was healthy. And I remember his mom just like holding him sometimes. And he was just, rageous. She just would hold him. Mm-hmm. And he had to know that her love was present. He had to know that there was love there because for so many years there wasn't. I mean, it didn't look like love. It looked like go to your room and we're locking the door.
Right.
You know, you have that feeling, too bad. You've behaved like that, go to the room.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even remember your question, but I wanted to share that story.
Yeah, it was the long-term implications of that behavioral model, and they turned it around. But yeah. it almost strikes me that it's like living from the outside in. As opposed to the inside out. Like yeah. We're looking like the people who get caught on the hamster wheel of the things and, indulgences and never feeling full, I guess, or whole.
Yeah. And it's also that, our children are so distracted these days. We have so much technology around us. And I know in the Mindful World Summit that you're going to be talking about that, which is so amazing, amazing, because I think that's the toughest parenting challenge these days. Is to navigate what we've never navigated before. And we are really the pioneers of this generation. Someone said it the other day to me that this is completely new.
Yeah.
And we need to be connected with our children, but we also need to have them know that this is a safe space. Like, this is a safe space. You want your child, don't you want your child to come to you at any age with what they're going through?
Yes, absolutely.
You're going to want them to come to you. Mm-hmm. So that's not nurtured. So the long-term effects of punishments is that you don't have that. You don't have that safe space.
Yes.
And we can go into the biology and the cortisol and everything that's happening during punishments and how the brain is activated. But really just from human terms, if someone is acting, is trying to control you over and over and over again, there's not that safety to just be who you are.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the thing is the irony, and you see this in a lot of dynamics of different relationships of someone who's overly controlling is they end up with the least control because you taught people not to come to you. Like you have no idea what's going on now.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember I worked with a doctor in France, and he had a teenage daughter and she went to college. And he had used punishments as well. And he really wanted to connect with his daughter, and his daughter had locked herself in her dorm room. So he was in one city. She was in another city further away. Mm-hmm. She was in Paris. He was outside of Paris. And she locked herself in, and he didn't know how to reach her. He didn't know how to reach her. What was going on? Was she just drugging herself all day? Like, we didn't know she didn't know what was going on. And so his journey was going through changing the patterns as well, and having that deep connection with her so he could figure out what was actually happening with his child.
Okay. And so, you know, part of the message is that even at that age, there's still things that we can do. Because I think people kind of think, oh my gosh, like, I look at all the stuff I've done. Like, they could be right now, my kid's 12, they're 16, they're whatever age, there is still hope of being able to rejig things and mm-hmm. figure out a new way of relating.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. We've seen amazing, I get really excited because we've just seen amazing changes in parents that had been spanking their kids. And parents that, I mean, you know, dramatic situations have totally turned around. And the reason is because I think one of them is the brain has neuroplasticity. So it can change, it's flexible. It can change at any moment and develop mm-hmm. new patterns.
Yeah.
So absolutely. Yeah. There's always hope for that deep connection if you take it on as a parent.
Absolutely. Amazing. Thank you so much. Now, you've talked in some of your examples about people in different places. I mentioned at the beginning that you train people to be parenting coaches from all around the world. And, you know, we talked a little bit, you and I, about just this model of being in the world as a parent and actually being able to do what you love on so many levels and support yourself. Can you tell us a little bit about this other level of parenting breakthrough that you discovered along the way?
Yes, I think there's a dilemma that we're not talking about as moms. And we become moms, and all of a sudden this incredible love floods into our lives. And now, what do we do? I mean, do we go back to work and pay for our childcare and have somebody else take care of our child for most of the day and see them an hour in the morning, an hour at night, maybe? Or how do we be with our children? You know, they're here to learn from us. We're here to have this incredible relationship. And financially, this is what's not really talked about as a mom, that you don't have, or in the old model, there's not really the time for you to be with your child and be the mom and also be your professional self. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, I think for every mom is really grappled with this. And when I became a mom, I thought, this is crazy. We've got to change this. Like, no way. I was mm-hmm. in the film industry 16 hours a day. Usually we work on set. And I'm not going, you know, 16 hours, no. Like, I want to be with my child. And there's got to be another way. There's got to be something else. So we opened the door. I just said, you know what? No, I want to work less hours, get paid more, and be able to do my mommying. Because I want to be there for him all the time. I wanted to be there for him. You know, yes, he was in a preschool, but after, when he gets out, he's never had a nanny. I've always been there for him. And so I started looking at the coaching model and how can we as mothers be coaches to other mothers? Hmm. And for that, how can we create a system of coaching that allows us to be there, not as like not put in that many hours, so not be there for 8 hours a day and also be able to be there for our kids and be an income earner? I think it's really important for women, especially now, to earn their own income, like be empowered. I think it does something not just for the family's bank account, but it does something for your self-esteem as a mom and as a woman. And I could speak forever about this. I just think it's so incredibly important that we take this on right now. And we know that we are valuable and that the services, not just as a mom, that we offer are valuable. So being able to really make a difference in someone else's life and also be able to make a difference in your child's life. And why parent coaching is like that is because when you're coaching another parent, you're also receiving all the lessons yourself. So you're parenting, if you're going to be a person of integrity, then your parenting automatically has to shift and up-level itself. And that's what our parenting coaches notice. So they work, you know, we've set up a system where they work 1 hour a week with a parent for 10 weeks. So if they want to have one client, they earn $2,000 for that client that they have. Mm-hmm. And if they want to have 10 clients a week, they work 10 hours a week and they receive, you know, $2,000 a client and they work with them for 10 weeks. So mm-hmm. by creating a system where moms can actually earn a really good income, not in not that many hours, and do something that fills their heart and that is actually making a difference. And then also being able to be there for their children and up-level their own parenting.
That is incredibly important in terms of empowering women and families, right?
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right when it comes to the impact on the healer or the coach when you are doing the work. I benefit so much from the work that I do with my clients. And it does. You have to walk the walk if you're going to talk the talk. So
that's right. Yeah,
absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. And interesting to see how that process unfolds with, you know, the very thing that's of central importance, becoming expert in that, helping others and getting that feedback, not just financially, but also in upping your parenting game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in terms of the process, I mean, can anyone become a coach like this? Like what kind of training? Like how long does it take?
Yeah. So we have a 6-month certification program.
Okay.
We have trained, I don't want to say housewives. I really don't like that word. We've trained women from all different walks of life. So the answer is yes. If you have a passion for parenting and you have a passion for this kind of conscious parenting without punishments, mm-hmm. then you're trainable.
Okay.
And I love training. We've trained women who've come from corporate America. We've trained nutritionists. We've trained life coaches. We've trained therapists. We've trained stay-at-home moms. We have trained just the variety now, school counselors, teachers, just a variety of moms who really have craved this transformation. They've just craved to have time with their child and be able to make a difference so that they can do this in less hours and really affect change and also bring in a really viable income for their family.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that, because that is another level of breakthrough. And, you know, I'm in Canada, you're in the United States. Our countries are very different in terms of the support that they give to new parents, you know, and those kind of societal supports that are there or not there. But also, you know, I think universally, I don't know that the world is very accommodating to parents when it comes to work.
I'm not sure about Canada, but here mm-hmm. certainly not.
Yeah.
Mothers, it's not, you know, oh, here's a year of paid leave for, and even that. So even mm-hmm. if you had paid leave for a year, what are you going to do the next year?
Right.
Your child's going to be 1 to 2. So
yeah,
there's just, I think, and this is one model, Stacey, I think mm-hmm. that there are other models that exist like this, but I would encourage moms, if you really are feeling that need to be with your children and be there for all those moments, and you want to be a breadwinner, which I think all parents, all moms should be, mm-hmm. To really research and find out how you can do that. It's absolutely doable.
Mm-hmm. So we don't need to be stuck in the idea of like, this is how it was before, this is how it needs to be, that we can maybe take stock of what's really important and challenge ourselves to see like, what creative ways can I actually support my family in the best way possible and myself.
Yeah. And I like to say, look, you gave birth. Mothers are the most creative force on the planet.
Absolutely.
We're going to figure this out.
It's okay. Well, thank you for that. There's many solutions. So, you know, is this, you know, this relationship between parenting and working and supporting yourself, supporting your family, I'm curious if this is the major issue that you think we need to solve, or are there others that you think that would make such a big difference in the world?
I think it's part of the major issue that we need to solve. And I think underneath that is women's empowerment. I think mm-hmm. women's empowerment is absolutely the number one issue that we need to solve. And I think that's why when we birth a child, all of a sudden all these issues come to the surface.
Absolutely.
And I certainly think what's going on in the world with the Me Too movement and everything we've seen from, you know, the Kavanaugh hearings to, it's just, we need to really honor and respect women as the divine beings that they are. And we need to flip the whole, for us in the US and Canada, but flip mm-hmm. our whole culture around so that women feel that they are so loved up and so empowered, and there's never a question. Mm-hmm. There's never a question about any of this. There's never a question about, you know, a woman being less than a man. Mm-hmm. There's just never a question. It's like silly. We give life. Like, we're the creative force on the planet. Mm-hmm. So I think that is the core of mm-hmm. the issue that needs to be solved.
Okay. And what do you see as an emerging problem that no one is really talking about that we really do need to address?
I think the emerging problem is technology that we really do need to address. I think it's changing the brains of our children, and that some people, I saw a beautiful video with Simon, I'm not going to say his last name right,
Sinek.
The other day, and yeah, he really spoke to what it's doing, and that not a lot of us are talking about it because we are so sold on this device.
Yes.
And it's almost like the movie WALL-E, where we're, you know, I don't know if you saw it, but they're all really big, and they're mm-hmm. just, they're not walking anymore. They just have their screen in front of them. Mm. And your child doesn't need a screen in a restaurant. Your child does not need a screen in their stroller. You know, your child is fine. And I think that we're rewiring the brain in ways that we don't even understand. We're starting to see, but we're rewiring it in a way that needs that immediate gratification and is completely the opposite of connection.
Yeah.
So we're not connecting person to person anymore. And I think that is really the deeper issue that needs to be addressed. And we're mm-hmm. going to see we already see ramifications of it.
Yeah. I would say absolutely. And yes, we do need to figure this out. And hopefully the summit, your contribution and others, moves us further in that direction with more of us regaining a sense of balance with these things that are very new. Absolutely. Oh, you know, among all of the challenges, there's always some good news too. I don't know if you see, you know, that there's some things that we're doing well that make you feel hopeful. Is there one thing that you could share with us?
Yeah, I think allowing children to have a voice is really making me feel really hopeful. And mm-hmm. seeing what children are doing and speaking out right now, especially teenagers, for what's happening in our world is mm-hmm. really an incredible model for us as parents and for our children to see that they do have a voice and we can listen to their voice. And mm-hmm. I think that is, for me, because of all the work that we've done, when I see that and I see children organize, or I see, you know, teenagers organize and say, no, we're not going to stand for shootings in our school, and we're not mm-hmm. going to stand for this, and we're going to do what we need to do. We're going to use our voices. Mm-hmm. It's so powerful. Awesome. And I think that's what really gives me hope, is that everyone's going to start using their voices a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, yes. And, you know, if there was one thing that you would like our viewers to action today, like something they can do pretty much now at the end of this interview, that you think would make a big difference for themselves and their families, what would that be?
I think it would be to sit with your child and offer them empathy without any expectation of anything happening in the moment. So just to sit and find out what, be curious about your child, like curious about what are they feeling? What are they going through in that moment? And to really listen. I think that we could really up our listening so much of our children.
Mm-hmm. So really focusing on like the no agenda, either just understand and tune in fully presently. Yeah, with them.
Without phones.
Yeah. Leave the phone in the drawer and really give it your all. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Yeah. And before I leave you today, I need you to please bless us, give us your most profound statement.
My most profound statement. Okay.
Yeah, whatever's coming through you right now.
I think what I'm thinking about right now is that our children don't need to be labeled or diagnosed. Our children need to be deeply understood for who they are.
Awesome. That's really beautiful. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
Gillette Jai, if people want to get in touch with you or learn more about what you're offering, what's the best way for them to do that?
Go to our website, Jai Institute for Parenting, forparenting.com. And yeah, you can learn more about us there.
Okay, excellent. Well, I'm so glad you made the time to contribute to this summit. I know that people will get so much out of it. And all the best to you with all the work that you're doing. Thank you so much for helping make this be a more mindful world.
Oh, thank you so much for what you guys are doing. I'm so appreciative of being here. It was great.
Awesome. You take care.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.